When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
You're listening to the Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
It is episode number 168, and it is going to be, Jeff, do you have the lights off? Are the lights down? Have you got the sultry music on? Because it's episode number 168, Star Wars Splash Page, After Dark.
Geek me all knowing box sets stay open May 4th. I'm hoping Luke gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
I don't know about you, Matt, but that's how I always have things set when we record. That's just sort of how I live my life.
That's how babies are made.
Well, not around here. You gotta have a partner for that. Or so I'm told. Another week. Another week without comics. At least
sadly,
without new comics.
Yeah, sadly, alas, no new comics again. That's okay though, because you know we are looking at the start of Star Wars comics on this episode of Star Wars Splash Page After Dark. We're going to look at Dark Empire, which was published by Dark Horse Comics way back when I was in college.
So. And I was in... freshman in high school.
You were a freshman in 1991?
Yep, I was a freshman in 1991. Yeah, I was a freshman when this came out in December of 1991.
Yep.
I had just gotten my first set of contact lenses, which were rigid gas permeable contact lenses that felt like I was shoving a log in my eye every time I used them.
Well, I was 21 and barreling through college and skipping lots of class to drive to Austin, Texas for South by Southwest and skip another week or two of class to drive up to Chicago, of all places, just because I wanted to see all these awesome bands like Urge Overkill and Liz Phair and Smashing Pumpkins. And it was great fun. I had a good time.
All the bands that people our age are paying hundreds upon hundreds of dollars to see now.
Oh, my gosh.
They can afford to, yeah.
Yeah. Of course, I got to see them in these clubs, so, like 30 people. It was great fun. It was so much fun. Although the one thing I didn't get to see, I did not get to see Big Black. That just never happened. So could never skip the right class. And plus, it was a long drive from Auburn, Alabama, up to Chicago.
So. Yes, it was. I've driven through Alabama, and it's a long drive to get anywhere from Alabama.
This is true.
Both chronologically and mentally, I feel like.
This is true. But yeah, no, this is something we have been discussing and bandying about for a couple of years. I mean, normally there's never really a surfeit. Well, there's never time, but there's never a surfeit of new Star Wars comics. And we figured now, with the publishing pause still ongoing and likely to probably extend through May, we already know for a fact that IDW won't be really publishing anything in May. Now, of course, remember, this is all subject to change. It could change on a dime, but, I don't really think Marvel is probably going to be dropping any new material until the first week of June. Hopefully sooner, but, probably around then. At least that's my best guess. So we figured, hey, let's take a look at some of the Dark Horse comics that, it basically helped.
Laid the foundation of the expanded universe.
Oh, very really. Much so. Very much.
On the heels of Timothy Zahn's Heir to the Empire.
Yeah, that trilogy by Timothy Zahn, as well as this six-issue miniseries Dark Empire by Tom Vetch and Cam Kennedy, really propelled Star Wars back into, if not the public consciousness, the public semi-consciousness, because we were getting new material involving the classic characters, set after the events of at what was at the time the last film, Return of the Jedi. And, you know, they were entertaining and they were good stories. And of course, Dark Horse realized that they had a nice formula for success and just exploded with titles and stories. You know, a lot of which have become, like you said, you know, the bedrock of the expanded universe of what is now known as Legends, but have also, you know, some trace elements, subtly and not so subtly, have made their way into the new canon.
Which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Oh, and yeah. Some of these were extremely, extremely unsubtle.
Yeah, so it'll be a lot of fun. And then, of course, you know, our other avenue or venue is Star Wars Flash Page Classics. And we're going to take a look at some select story arcs and issues from Marvel's Star Wars comics, Volume 1, that were published from 1977 to 1986. So, but as for news, not a whole lot, but we got a couple of nuggets. Michael Moretzi, whose Star Wars Adventures, The Clone Wars Battle Tales, 5-issue weekly miniseries, is on hold, but not canceled, just on hold. Had a great tweet last week. He tweeted a picture of a First Order notebook. And it's a pretty cool notebook. And he says, "I've been saving this notebook for a very special occasion. It's literally been sitting on my desk. And I've been waiting, hoping, for the moment to arrive. And it has. But what the special project is, that's a mystery." So, of course, some of the comics press, which is, will do anything for a click, you know, seized upon that tweet as perhaps, you know, the revelation of a new Star Wars comic series from IDW, perhaps, set during the events of the sequel trilogy. We don't know. Michael can't say, thanks to NDAs, and that's fine. But it's kind of cool. And, you know, and if he's going to be writing a story like that, I'm all for it.
Whatever he does, it's going to be interesting.
Oh, totally.
Because he's totally. If he's involved, yeah.
Oh, yeah. As well as for Marvel, people had wondered if John Tyler Christopher was going to be returning and doing some of his very popular Star Wars action figure variants. Well, we can say with authority, that's a big yes. Starting with Star Wars number 6, he will be doing a cover. And that's you know, hopefully the first of many. And, of course, the cover for that issue is the issue where Luke is revealed to have a yellow lightsaber. So, 5 will get you 10. I'm wagering that we'll get, you know, a Luke Skywalker action figure with a little telescoping yellow lightsaber.
Oh, obviously. We have to. Oh,
totally.
We have to.
And last but not least, if you're on the Twitters, like we're on the Twitters, and you're not following Roberto_draws, you should check him out. He's got a great work in progress showing Dr. Aphra and Magna Tolvan. It's really awesome. We've retweeted it, so you can find it on our Twitter feed, no problem. But do check it out. It's a great illustration. Of course, you know me. I love anything with Dr. Aphra and Magna Tolvan. So that's just the way I am.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
So there we go. That's you know, that's where we are for now.
That's about, yeah. It's, and like you said, it's news, but there's not a lot of official news. But it's nice that there is still discussion happening. You know, nobody's forgotten about Star Wars comics and everything. And I'll tell you what's interesting. You mentioned you know, Dark Horse had the license up until what, like 2015, I think, wasn't it?
They lost the license in 2014. I believe a couple of years after Marvel was purchased by Disney?
Yes, it was just before the Rise of Skywalker or the Force Awakens, The Last Jedi. The Force Awakens came out about a year before that, I believe, and it was just started a new Star Wars title, which I was enjoying very much.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one too, and you know, we got two or three more, because we got the Darth Maul miniseries out of Dark Horse.
Yeah,
and then their last Star Wars title was Rebel Heist, which enjoyable miniseries. I thought it was pretty cool. It was a given. It was a foregone conclusion, especially after Disney bought Lucasfilm. I mean, the writing was on the wall. Nobody doubted for a moment that Dark Horse was going to keep hold of the license. And I did actually a while back in 2015. If you go to coffeewithkenobi.com, I did a long dispatch about how Dark Horse got the license to begin with and what they did with it and how they had to give it up. And it was a good interview. I had a good time. I talked to several people at Dark Horse, and they were very forthcoming. I remember when I was setting up the interview, I was talking to one of their editors, and one editor said, "Well, can we really talk about that?" And the other editor said, "Why? What are they going to do? Take away the license?"
So, having nothing to lose. Freedom is another word for nothing left to lose, as the song said. What I was trying to say.
You got it, man. You got it. So, no matter what your opinion is on the expanded universe versus the new canon, or whatever camp you're in, there's no denying that Dark Horse published some very quality oriented Star Wars comics. Some were not so quality. But
there's some misses in there, but quite a few hits. Yeah,
definitely so. But to launch the way they did with Dark Empire was just to me a great way to do it. Because it like I said, it built on the lore of the original trilogy and cast our characters forward in time, and gave them this is what set 6 years after.
After the Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, after the battle of the Endor Moon.
A year after the Thrawn trilogy.
Exactly. So it incorporated a bunch of, new material as well as old material, and gave us a fairly intriguing storyline if you watch The Rise of Skywalker, and based on the tenor of Star Wars Twitter of late.
I have lots of notes about that.
You
read these when they were released? Were you reading them as they were released, issue by issue?
I picked up Dark Empire 1, and it was like, I think those were it was literally the only comic I picked up for 6 months. Because I sort of sat out the 90s when it came to comics, because, the 90s was becoming rather extreme.
Yeah, it's a good time to fall off the train for a little bit.
I was very happy to have fallen off the train. As a matter of fact, I took about I actually stopped in 1988, because the stories were getting unusually weird and the art was just
and not in a good way
veering off the rails. I loved Star Wars. And when I read, I actually read a story about it in the newspaper that it was coming. So I went to the comic shop and said, put me down for this. I'd like to give it a shot. And the guy was like, "Who are you?" And I said, it's going to be 6 issues. You're going to pick them up. I said, how much are they? He goes, "Well, they're this much." I said, "All right, here, I'll pay for all 6 in advance." I read them every month and I enjoyed them.
Or every other month, as it were, because they came out every 2 months. I was aware of this, but I was not reading comics actively in 91. So I didn't read this until probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I bought it digitally, and it's interesting because I went back and read it, and we're just talking about Dark Empire. We're not talking about Dark Empire 2 or Empire's End tonight. So I stopped at the end of Dark Empire, and I remember I was much more impressed with it this time than I was the first time I read it. And I think it's because I went on at the end of this, I went on and read Dark Empire 2 and Empire's End, and they're sort of diminishing returns with each book. Each one is less than the one that came before it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one.
This one really stands. If you just read this on its own, it's very impressive.
It is.
It's unfortunate that it didn't end as strongly as it began.
And we should point out, if I am correct, and if I am not, I'm sure somebody will correct me very publicly on Twitter. This has not been republished in print by Marvel yet. You can get it digitally. As a matter of fact, they've got the digital collection that has Dark Empire, Dark Empire 2, and Empire's End. You can still find single issues published by Dark Horse and back issue pens. Sometimes
and they're not cost prohibitive either.
No, not at all. Now, if you're looking for the original Dark Horse collected editions, those are cost prohibitive because they fetch a fair price and a very high price at that. But reading them digitally is fine because I don't want to say they've been totally remastered because they haven't, but it still translates quite nicely. So it's just one of these stories that I think that really stands the test of time. And
I think it's, for a Star Wars fan and you want to venture out beyond the movies, I think it's sort of essential. Even though it's not canon, I think it's sort of essential storytelling because there's a lot of stuff in here that has been, they've sort of picked and chosen from a lot of this for other stuff now that is canon.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, and let's just acknowledge the elephant in the room. Clones.
Yes.
Lots of clones of Emperor Palpatine. Clony, clony, cloning, cloning. Clones.
I was amazed at how many plot points from The Rise of Skywalker were present in this book. Because, again, it's been 10 years since I read it, saw The Rise of Skywalker, go back to read it, and I'm like, wow, I think we both said, I kind of would have preferred, I think, if they had just made this as the third trilogy.
You know... Yeah, and let me preface it by saying that I thoroughly enjoyed The Rise of Skywalker. It's a fun movie. I find it very endearing to my heart. I watch it a lot now that it's available on Blu-ray and digital. But part of me does kind of wonder,
This story to me is would have been a more satisfying conclusion to that story.
Yeah,
than The Rise of Skywalker was. I enjoyed The Rise of Skywalker, but I've said on occasion, I was whelmed by it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was not overwhelmed, not underwhelmed. I was whelmed. And this one is just, it's just really strong. So before we get into that, the creative team in here, Tom, is it Tom Veitch? Veitch?
I've always thought it was Tom Veitch. I may be wrong, but.
And Cam Kennedy, Tom Veitch was the script and Cam Kennedy did the art. So Cam Kennedy did all of the art.
Like yes.
The illustration, the inking, and the coloring.
He did. And, of course, Todd Klein handled the lettering.
And these covers by Dave Dorman are just amazing.
Well, of course, it's Dave Dorman.
Yeah, these are cinematic quality covers. So, just the covers alone to me are worth the price of admission.
Oh, very much so. And what we do is, we open up 10 years after the Battle of Yavin.
6 years.
No, it says right here, approximately 10 years after the Battle of Yavin. Look at the intro. Does your digital copy not say that?
No.
Mine does.
Where does it say that?
Well, if you look at the digital version through that Marvel published.
Oh, I got the one that Dark Horse published.
Oh, man, you are so old school. Interesting. Yes. Does yours say 6 years?
Yes.
Weird. Very interesting.
Where are you seeing 10? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Where are you seeing 10?
Right here where it says approximately 10 years after the Battle of Yavin.
On what page is what I'm trying to ask, Matt?
I am looking at page 5 of the Marvel Comixology version.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, mine actually doesn't give a... we've got the scroll, Book 1, Destiny of a Jedi, that tells what's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it never specifically says anywhere in here where this falls in the timeline.
Well...
And I'm going with 6 years because of the Wikipedia.
Yeah, yeah. So this may have been an alteration, perhaps. A retcon.
Interesting. But it's not canon anymore, so what difference does it make?
It doesn't matter at all. But how could a comic book retcon something? That's never, ever happened.
Never, ever happened. No.
But yeah, so approximately 10 years or 6 years. After
10 years after the Battle of Endor. Well, it would be 10 years after the Battle of Yavin.
Yeah. So
been 6 years after the Battle of Endor. So there, that's what happened there.
Ah, lucidity raises its ugly head yet again. So, yeah, so we're a decade out, from the Battle of Yavin. Darth Vader, dead. Emperor Palpatine, dead.
Or so we thought.
The New Republic has been formed. But, not surprisingly, long years of struggle have ensued. So it's very intriguing. So what has happened is essentially is that the remnants of the Empire are rebuilding their strength. They've reclaimed,
much like the First Order.
Exactly. They've reclaimed the majority of worlds, much like the First Order.
Yep.
Including Coruscant, which, if you give credence to what may or may not have been Colin Trevorrow's script, the First Order did. So,
oh, right.
So what is happening now is we basically have a civil war within the resurgent empire. And the New Republic is using this opportunity to increase the confusion, to sort of, if our two enemies are fighting each other, that benefits us.
And as always, our heroes are back on their heels again.
Always.
Trying to play catch up.
Oh my gosh. Always, always. And that's where we open up with Dark Empire number one. And it's Luke and Lando are trapped on Coruscant. And we open up with Han and Leia and C-3PO flying into Coruscant, basically having to navigate their way through this massive debris field, with Chewie, co-piloting, to get down to the planet to save everybody, to save Luke and Lando.
And the first thing I'm struck by is the art. It's very stylized.
It is very stylized.
Almost washed out. And I love it. I think it's so great. And there's so much on here that almost looks like watercolor, especially the images of the planet and the sky looks almost like it's done with watercolor.
Doesn't it? And of course, with Cam doing all the art chores, that's understandable.
But we don't lose any detail. But it's almost sort of it almost looks like we're seeing, if you ever see like a negative of a film. That's almost what it looks like to me, like we're seeing the reverse of everything. And it's very effective, and I love it. And yeah, there's so much in here that just screams early 90s. The writing is sort of melodramatic. I don't really feel like they captured the voice of the characters as well as the writers of today do. But it's very much in keeping with the early 90s.
Material
that I've read from the early 90s. Not bad, just a little stilted and not quite as conversational as I'm used to.
But I also have to wonder if that's because, they did not have a whole lot of stuff to go on when they were writing this. Think about it. All they had were the three movies. We're not going to count the holiday special. We're not going to count Ewoks or droids. they're not really mining what Marvel published, with Star Wars Volume 1. They're recrafting and telling this brand new story and trying to find their footing while they're doing so. So I see exactly what you mean about, some of the personas seem a little off, but that's because we're so used to having all this backstory now, especially with all these new novels, all these new comics,
true,
all these new films. We have the benefit of having the Solo A Star Wars Story movie.
Right.
We have novels about Princess Leia, growing up, about Princess Leia finding her footing as a senator, and within the New Republic and more and more. We have Princess Leia, the Hutt Slayer, things
right.
like that.
Right, yeah, so. We do. Yeah, that's true.
So, but yeah, I do want to point out one thing, though, on this opening splash page, or on the splash page, where we see the debris field where the Falcon is flying through with a Star Destroyer split in two and another Star Destroyer falling apart. Right above the Falcon, just catty corner to the right. Is that not, tell me, that is so close to what the Ralph McQuarrie original design of the Falcon was supposed to be floating.
It does look very much like that. You're right. So, it's like it which became the blockade runner.
Yeah, of course. And of course, there's a blockade runner to the left. But
yeah.
It's little things like that, of course, as you know, that I notice. And I really dug that. But yeah.
No, that is cool. That is cool.
But they don't waste any time to, they do a good job with these comics are somewhat wordy, especially with with narrative dialogue. Although one of the flaws I have found in this miniseries is that some of the big events that happen off panel.
Which is, happens a lot in Star Wars too, though.
This
if
is
you
true.
Think about it, in A New Hope, we didn't see the Senate get disbanded. We never even saw the Senate. That bounty hunter ran into on Ord Mantell. There's a lot of things. And it's even worse in the prequels. The most interesting stuff in the prequels happens off camera. So, it's not without precedent in Star Wars, but Yeah, I'm with you. There's a lot of stuff that they would they tell instead of show.
True, true. But again, you know, we have our fabled heroes, our core group of protagonists. You know, and the way Cam draws them, I think is fairly good.
It's stylized. It's not photorealistic, but it's very stylized, and it's consistent over the whole six issues.
Particularly Chewbacca.
Yes.
Because, you know, I know the original run of Marvel Comics, they had a problem with Chewie drawing Chewie. So they finally sort of righted it.
Chewie is pretty spot on this time.
Yeah, very much so. And
Chewie
I like
Leia especially.
Yeah. You know, Han is a little more Aquilonian and very much a little more intense in his facial reactions.
But, yes, he seems a little younger, a little more angular than Harrison Ford's face.
This is true, but
Luke is a bit more. Luke to me looks a bit brutish.
He does, but then again, if you look though, that's how Cam has drawn a lot of the characters. They reminded me of stylized He-Man figures.
Yeah, it does, and it encapsulates his power because Luke is a very powerful Jedi at this point. You know, the first time we see him, his silhouette looks like Darth Vader, obviously, as he's coming out of the smoke and everything. One thing that's interesting, there is an animated fan film version of this issue that you can find on YouTube. They're working on all six issues, but they've only have the first one completed. There's a scene where he destroys some battle droids. They call them weapon droids here. In the cartoon that's on there, they've changed those to look like the battle droids from the prequels. They've updated it a little bit. And there are a couple of things here and there that I see that haven't really held true. They were kind of guessing on and they guessed wrong.
Well, that's to be expected, though.
It happens.
But we're also treated to some really great nuggets here. Like, you know, we have a TIE tank in one page. You know, which is literally what it sounds like. It's a TIE fighter type. It's a pod. You know, just like you know, it's a twin ion engine pod, except instead of twin ion engine panels, they're treads.
Treads on each side of it. Yeah, so, it's really cool. And the other thing I liked was when they land the Falcon and go into battle, these scavengers immediately descend upon the Falcon and start stripping it apart. And it's just one of those things that, like, with the galaxy's in as bad a shape as it is, you know, there are people who are living that life that they're living on such a razor's edge that they have to go into a battle not to fight, but to steal stuff off of a junky ship.
Yeah, totally, totally. And then we also have little nuggets here, like, you know, we find out that, you know, as they're landing, for example, we get the narrative, you know, because Leia, you know, Han's flying with Chewie, and Leia's manning the cannons, and this is just great because this dialogue, it's right on point, and it gets you right into the story. Leia Organa, wife of Han Solo, already a mother of two, is above all things a Jedi warrior. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. And she talks about how Luke was right. She can feel the Force moving through, guiding her hands as she's shooting from the Falcon's cannon. But again, she says, you know, guiding my hands in the terrible tasks of war. And that's the kind of dialogue I'm talking about. That is a bit stilted.
Yeah, I don't think she'd ever say something like that. So,
but again, it's all, you know, it's consistent throughout the book. So it just sort of has its own reality, I'll say.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that strikes me about the dialogue, particularly Leia's dialogue, is you get a sense of the uncertainty and urgency that is grappling the New Republic. Because we can't call it the Rebellion anymore, but it's still operating as it, you know, with the spirit of the Rebellion, even though it's, you know, officially a government of sorts, but it's a government with very little power. They're still having to project their power, throughout the galaxy, and are finding it very hard to do so, even with the fact that the Empire is torn asunder and waging its own civil war. So,
right. Talking about Cam Kennedy's art, we were talking about Luke's face, and there's one page near the end of this issue. It's page 23 in my copy. There's a full page of this explosion. Then there are two inset panels, one of Luke saying, "It's almost upon us. There's no need for you to die." And then it cuts to his face, and he says, "It doesn't want you. It wants me. Leave or all of you or you'll be destroyed." And his face there just looks positively demonic.
It does. I mean, and it's got a yellow hue over it. So it's clearly, it's, you know, it's foreshadowing.
Yes.
I'm looking right at that inset panel, and this is as someone like this force storm is swallowing everything on the planet. you know, in its path. And, you know, Lucas said, because essentially what the first issue is like we said, you know, Luke and Lando and a rebel team are on Coruscant. Leia, Han, Chewie, C-3PO, and I think that was 9-Nub, are going to retrieve them to get them off, you know, along with the other rebels. And they are successful. And then this force storm hurricane cloud shows up and just starts gobbling everything up in its path. And, you know, Luke, because he is a master Jedi now, you know, he realizes, you know, this is what I'm meant to face. It's here for me. And, you know, of course he has to convince, again, that dialogue, you know, this is Leia. No, Luke, we are brother and sister Jedi. The others can go. I must stay. We are brother and sister, but my destiny is not yours. Your children are the future of the Jedi. Protect them. Leave.
It reminds me of, if you ever go back and watch the 90s X-Men, the animated series, everybody always holds that up as such a great piece of television. And it is great. But if you watch it now, the dialogue is so melodramatic and the performances are so overwrought. It's a little hard to take it seriously at times. And it's kind of the same way here, but I have less of a problem because I'm reading it. I'm not hearing it. And again, just set against this artwork, it's just so effective.
It is. It really is. And I think that's part of what the appeal of the entirety of the 6-issue miniseries is for me, is it sets up what the story is from the first issue. It gives us a lot of world-building lore in 10 pages, and it sets the scene, or excuse me, it sets the stage for what's to come.
But at its heart, it's a very small story.
It's really compact.
It concerns very, very few characters, although the fate of the galaxy is at stake, but there are very few characters really involved.
Yeah. And I have to admit, there were things about this that surprised me. And of course, you know, I'm looking at this through the benefit of hindsight and everything that has come since. You know, and so like these, it's little things that I was like, oh, that's intriguing. So there is no Jedi Academy. He has no Padawans.
Right. At least not yet. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and right. You know, and again, it's, you know, the Force, the Jedi Knights are essentially the Skywalker bloodline now. And that's it. You know, there are no others. And, you know, when this came out, you know, when I was reading it back then, that made perfect sense to me, you know, because I didn't think that the Jedi Order was ever going to return. You know, I just figured it was just.
And if it did, I assumed it would take longer than, you know, 5/10 years.
Yeah, that it would be a very long-term building project prospect. And so, but now with the benefit of hindsight, you know, because we know that Luke started his own academy, you know, we saw, you know, not just mentions of that in the sequel trilogy, but, you know, but in the recently concluded Kylo Ren miniseries. And I'm sure we will see more of that as we go forward, as time crawls ever forward. But it's just, you know, this just really, it really just keeps everything very close knit. You know, there's new characters introduced in this miniseries. Obviously there has to be always, but they're mostly supporting characters and they're mostly scoundrels from the underworld, you know,
they are. And that's the one thing I like about it. And you know, and we do get some new ships. Like there, issue 2, we have a dungeon ship that references the Clone Wars, but it gets it wrong.
Of course. Well,
they're saying they're transporting Jedi Knights that were captured by the Imperials during the Clone Wars. And so, you know, they got it wrong, but
dungeon ship, more like a corpse ship. Am I right? Huh?
Yeah,
am I right?
Exactly. And and I think it's in issue 2 where we find out that the Emperor has been cloned.
Yes. Which, you know,
and you know, these, it's funny, these world devastators that we see, they look a little bit like, there was a ship in the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars that Mace Windu had to take down. It was just destroying this one planet. There was one, yeah, that was just, it looked a lot like this.
Oh, totally. And of course, I remember these ships from the the old Rogue Squadron video game for the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, and a lot of that stuff was based on these Dark Horse comics, yeah, as well. So. And yeah, and this dungeon ship is, yeah, it is. It's a really, really interesting design. And I love the way that they're basically, they have these force cages that they put Luke in. And again, this is where we meet the clone emperor. And it is very much in keeping with what we saw in The Rise of Skywalker. or at least what we learned from the novelization, because it wasn't really made clear in the film that he was a clone.
Yeah.
But it was kind of assumed that was the case.
Yeah, it was kind of assumed that he was.
Which is never a good thing for a film. It's one of the problems I had with the film was that was sort of, they didn't really commit one way or the other. But and again, the way the Emperor is drawn here, he's very gaunt, and it's obviously the Emperor, but there's something just a little off about him, and I think that's why. And it's disheartening to see Luke, you know, bow to him so easily, but you find out at the end that it was all part of his plan. And I just was really, really surprised at how much from the sequel trilogy we got in this book.
Yeah, but you know what? One thing really surprised me though about all of this, especially in issue two, because that's where, you know, as you're referring to, when, you know, Luke makes the journey, and the planet is Biss, and it's deep in the galactic core. Which I you know, now in 2020, I find kind of odd, because it's like, okay, so it's hiding in plain sight.
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, with the new canon, you know, it's out somewhere, you know, in wild space. You know,
nobody could find it.
In the unknown regions. I just thought that was intriguing. And I have to wonder if they decided, well, yeah, it makes more sense to have this, you know, spirited off somewhere where nobody's ever been, as opposed to, you know, right in the center
right
of the
in the
core.
Middle of that thing, yeah.
But it's an impressive world, though.
It is. And again, you know, each issue has its own story, goes one to the other. I think maybe my favorite cover of all, though, is issue 3's cover, because it looks very much like a 60s, like a Hammer horror film with Luke with those, you know, those all white eyes just sort of cowering over who we assume is Leia in the white. And this one, book 3 is called The Battle for Calamari. And I'm thinking, well, the things are getting intense at the Olive Garden. because they went with calamari instead of Mon Cala or Mon Calamari.
Oh, God.
And this is where we learn that Luke Skywalker is now referred to as Supreme Commander Skywalker instead of Supreme Leader Snoke or Supreme Leader Ren. That we saw in the sequel trilogy. And I just, this is where it's really everything's starting to kind of come together.
Yeah. And I do want to point out, this issue is where we get a lot of great Lando content.
Yes.
So, you know, cause you know, we see him, you know, building on that little maneuver he pulled at the Battle of Tanab, obviously, but, you know, and a lot of great spaceborne action and fighting here, you know, with, you know, the subplot being, you know, Leia convinced that Luke needs to be saved. And I just, that, you know, I was still perplexed. I was perplexed then when I first read it, and I'm still perplexed now that for Luke, the only option to truly defeat Palpatine on the dark side was to embrace the dark side. You know, is to, you know, be, you know, basically embrace what wants to destroy you and destroy it from within, which is essentially the crux of this entire miniseries.
It is, and you're right. It's a little odd that he would go that route, and it's not. That's one problem that I have with it, is that we, much like we don't ever really see Vader making a, or Anakin, I should say, making a real decision to fall to the dark side, we don't see Luke sussing this out for himself. It's just sort of all of a sudden, oh, this is the way to go. I've seen it, but with no explanation. I mean, even not at the end. We'll talk about that when we get to our discussion of the end, but one thing that's interesting here is Lando, something that Lando would never do is admitting that he can't do something, which is he can't command a Star Destroyer. And the Star Destroyer is getting sucked into this huge...
Into the Devastator.
And I love the look of that, as it's just sort of getting sucked into it. And Lando is, they're getting to their escape pods and everything. And then we, you know, we see Leia has a nice moment here where she's sort of communing with, she thinks, Vader's spirit.
Yep.
And it turns out that it's Luke, and then we get this really cool ship, the E-wing that they show here. It's different than the E-wings that we saw in the films, but it's a really interesting design.
I like it.
I do
a
too.
Lot. I would love to see more of this.
I would too. I would like to see them work that into the new canon somehow, and you know, Han's having to train the pilots, and he's not particularly happy about that. But
which I just could not see ever happening, though. But, you know, when you think about it, because in the novels, you know, he's gone off to do his racing team. Because if you remember, that was like, you know, that was the crux, you know, of the Han Solo miniseries.
Right.
The Eisner-nominated Han Solo miniseries. You know, he was, you know, having to do the Dragon Void run because, you know, he had a history of racing. And, of course, you know, when the New Republic was set up and seemed to be going full bore in the new canon.
He did his thing.
Yeah. So.
And one thing I didn't mention is the World Devastators are very reminiscent of those Star Destroyers that we saw in The Rise of Skywalker that had the, you know, planet-destroying lasers on them. So, again, that's another echo from what we got in the new trilogy in this book. And it's issue 3 where we meet some of Han's old compatriots, and including an old girlfriend named, what is her name? I've got it in my notes here.
You're doing better than I am because I don't have it in my notes.
Sana.
Yeah.
Oh, no, her name is Sala. S-A-L-L-A, not Sana. But she looks very much like Sana Staros.
Does she not, though?
Yes.
You have to wonder, was that a conscientious decision?
It had to be. You know, like I said, they're calling this Legends, but basically they've used things from it and made it canon now. So you might as well just say this part of the story is canon. They've just changed some of the names to protect the copyright.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, you know, it's what Dave Filoni has always said. You know, there's truth in legends. So,
right.
You know,
and there's that as well.
You know, and who's to say? You know, we're not privy to what Jason Aaron's writing process was, or when he was working with Jordan White and Heather Antos and the story group when they were crafting that first, those first few issues of Star Wars Volume 2. You know, but, you know, because, I mean, that was a big deal for Sana to be revealed like that. You know, I'm his wife. Wait, what?
So, right. And it's also interesting, the endings of these, the cliffhangers are a bit abrupt. You know, this one, Leia gets handed something from an old woman who we found out later was a Jedi, an escaped Jedi. And then, yeah, it just ends. And we find out that Boba Fett is still alive. And that's a big set piece for the next issue. Boba Fett and Dengar are after Han and Leia, and they're having to run around the city, and it's funny that Fett survived and we don't get a real explanation as to why, and it doesn't even follow with the story that our friends from last week with the Boba Fett comic told us about, because Dengar is there with him. So it's just interesting that we don't get any kind of explanation about how he survived, just that he survived. And so they get out and they hide on the back of a ship, or they're just attached to the back of a ship, and Fett follows him again, just like he always did. But again, I love it's Slave 2. Slave 2, yes, because Slave 1 got destroyed, apparently. But I love there's an image, it's on page 10 of mine, where you get this image of Luke with his hand out sort of controlling everything. And those eyes up in the inset, which I believe those are Leia's eyes, reminds me very much of Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
That is a very good observation, and one that I would not have thought of in a bazillion years. But now that you say that, you are exactly right.
And this actually would have come out before then, so he stole it from them, if it is indeed connected. But
come on, don't disparage Francis Ford Coppola like that.
I would never disparage Francis Ford Coppola or his wine, which I hear is delicious.
It is actually pretty good wine. I've had it. So
so Lando thankfully escapes, and this is sort of the action issue. A lot of stuff happens here. Han has to get away from his from his pursuers. And the Emperor that we see, yeah, we see the Emperor here. To me, he's much creepier than he ever was in Empire or Jedi.
Yeah, because he's more malevolent here.
He seems much more. Yeah, he is, and he's,
which is. You know, that's hard to say, you know, considering how evil Palpatine was in the original trilogy, or, you know, at least in Empire and Return of the Jedi, just, you know, how devious he was. And of course, watching him in the sequel trilogy, as Darth Sidious, you know, we just, you know, with that polite kind old man veneer, you know, right. masking the fact that he was just a, you know, well, for lack of a better term, have your kid leave the room, just a pure So.
I think what the team
here has done, what Tom and Cam have done, have actually done pulled off the impossible. They've made him even more malignant.
Yes, and we get a nice explanation of A, how he does the cloning and why. You know, he says here, long ago, I found my flesh could not withstand the awesome demands of the dark side. The great Emperor Palpatine discovered he was dying. My body was literally consumed by the energies I had released. Fortunately, there was a way, a road to eternal life. And we see all of this happening. And
of course, Leia tries to take a pot shot at him.
Right. And he says, well done, your first step toward the dark side of the Force. Now let me show you something. And just lays into her. And Luke, of course, won't help her. But he thinks that he's killed her. And he says, you know, take her to my quarters to begin the training. And Han, of course, goes right after Luke. And Luke puts a, you know, chokes him just like Vader did. Lifts him up and everything, and he says, I assure you, that may be true, Han. I may have to die, but I assure you it won't be you who does the deed. So we're kind of convinced, and that's the end of that issue, we're kind of convinced at this point that Luke is all in on this. And the next issue, that first page, there is a hunter-killer droid that looks like a probe droid on steroids.
Oh, no, and, you know, I remember reading when this came out, you know, and seeing this picture going, oh, maybe this is just, you know, like the spatial awareness of it. This is just an odd way for them to do it. No, dude, that thing is like the size of like a ship.
Yeah, it's the size of like almost the size of a Star Destroyer. And I did notice here that the crawl gets longer and longer with each of these issues, which amuses me. And so the breakout of this is very interesting. And I love the idea that the Emperor wants to take and inhabit Leia's unborn child, which, again, is a nice twist and makes everything just that much creepier.
Oh, my God. Doesn't it ever?
And raises stakes. And again, these are much more personal stakes that we're dealing with here. Obviously, the ramifications and the repercussions are going to be galactic wide, but the individual stakes are very personal, but yet no less compelling.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see Leia learning from a hologram, a Jedi hologram of a Jedi who's long gone. And, you know, Palpatine is letting her use it. And he says, I can enter your child, the one that is stirring in your womb. And that's just so skeevy.
Because this is not the twins, you know, this is, you know, the third child that's yet to come. So
it says, little Jedi, your next child belongs to me. Oh, and he says he realizes after she left that she took his holocron. And again, this next scene, we're talking about the artwork. The lighting in each scene is very specific. And this scene with Luke, you get a lot of pink and purple and blue hues. I really like what they're doing here. And this is where Luke is helping them escape. He helps, you know, Han and Chewie escape, gets him out, and then we find out at the end of the issue that he's been force projecting himself this whole time, which, again, we saw at the end of the Rise of the Last Jedi. And he seemingly destroys the Emperor at this point.
It appears that way.
And so I was just struck when I first realized, oh, this is a force projection. This is where they got it for the Last Jedi. I was amazed that it went that far back in the story, because up to this point, I'm thinking the Rise of Skywalker was just lifted a lot from this. But now I'm seeing that it goes back even further than that. And of course, we've seen things from Force Awakens and Last Jedi that have appeared in here now. And again, this next scene, Luke is destroying all of the tubes and everything, and the canisters that have the Emperor's clones in, but he hits all but except one. And this is where we think he's probably going to be in trouble. And it's interesting because this guy's naked, but the way it's drawn, we're obviously not seeing any of his naughty bits. but it's terrifying to me, just the way this guy is drawn and everything. He doesn't look human, and it's terrifying. And he says at the end of it, get up, we're going to find your sister. I want my holocron, and I want your sister's child. I'm going to crush the rebellion once and for all. And that takes us to the last issue, which, again, this cover is great because we see Leia in a dark robe like Luke's. So we're thinking, is she going to turn as well?
It seemed like that she might, you know, because there was enough of a buildup to make it seem very feasible.
Very much so. And again, we get more of the world devastators in this issue, and the Calamari, you know, again, helping, you know, taking charge of their own destiny there. And this is the issue where the Emperor's flagship shows up. And I'd forgotten about that when I started reading the book. That is such a cool design, and it's what, like, they say it's like 10 miles long or something.
Yeah, and so, I mean, now, you know, clearly, you know, we see perhaps the seeds of Snoke's supremacy.
Yes.
But even then, yeah, this I forgot as well, but this ship, it just blows me away.
Because it looks like a freaking saw. It looks like a it looks like one of the Uruk-hai blades from the Lord of the Rings.
There you go.
That's what it looks like.
There you go. That's you took the words right out of my mouth. It looks like an implement of torture.
Yes. And yeah. I cannot say enough good things about the design of this thing. It's just so it's so perfect. And you're right. I think it was very much the same design as the big ship that we saw in The Last Jedi, but I think that one, I think if you put this in that same scenario, it's going to look a little silly. In this scenario, it works just fine, but in that scenario, I don't know that we could have taken it seriously. But we get a great callback in this next scene with the clone emperor, and Leia is brought to his throne room. It's a nice callback to the end of Return of the Jedi, where Luke is having to fight Vader in front of the Emperor. So Leia is thinking she's going to have to do the same with Luke. And they do end up doing the same thing. And again, I love the way Luke is drawn here, because around his eyes, there are circles, but they're light circles, but they're only light because the rest of him is in shadow. And he says, I found knowledge there in the dark side. I found all the dark things Father knew so well. The ability to control others, to destroy others, if I so choose. Ben once warned me, if once you start down the path, forever will it command your destiny. Dominate your destiny, but I had to do it, Leia. I had to know my father. I had to know why he chose the dark side. And Leia says, and now you know what happened to our father. It's time to come home, Luke. And this is where everything really comes sort of full circle here. And I love that, just like at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, Luke and Leia have to band together to overcome the Emperor. And, you know, just like Rey and Ren had to, or Ben had to, as a dyad in the Force. And I love this. Luke's description of what he found in the dark side, he found isolation and fear. Turn that around in the concept of the Jedi not being alone, and therefore that's why they're victorious versus the Sith. Isolation is a great concept. And the fact that they were drawing power from Leia's unborn son.
Yeah.
I just love that. And this next to last page, where you're showing the Emperor's flagship being destroyed, and the Emperor up in that right corner, or left corner rather, in nothing but the red and the blue hues, with what looks like a Dracula cape coming up out of his neck, just screaming in agony, is so powerful of an image.
It's powerful, but you know what? It's satisfying.
Exactly.
It is so utterly satisfying to see him suffer finally, you know, because we were denied that in Return of the Jedi. You know, we saw him fall down the shaft, and, you know, to see him suffer the way he has made others suffer, as perverse as it may sound, it is...
It's justice. Yeah, and then, but then after that, the only problem is after that, we get one page to wrap everything up. It's a very abrupt ending. And he says, Leia, this is a beginning. I feel like great things are coming. The Jedi Knights will rise again, which is great. But I feel like we need a little more than that. Yes, this is that's what makes this, to me, a very personal story. Because we don't see the effect of this on everything else at the end.
No, we don't. We don't get that, you know, for lack of a better term, we don't get that victory celebration that we got at the end of the Return of the Jedi.
But I think we needed it after all of that.
I would think so, but I think it was also... because the story, you know, despite its galaxy-spanning scope and scale, it was still essentially very much a Skywalker story.
No, absolutely.
And, you know, so, you know, we see the Skywalker name is redeemed a second time, which I found intriguing because I know one of the arguments surrounding the rise of Skywalker was, you know, oh, well, if Palpatine was alive now, then, you know, the sacrifice that Anakin Skywalker made as Darth Vader was null and void. But, you know, I don't recall there being any debate about that, you know, with this
issue. When this came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it may be because it was handled better. You know, it was so, it was explained very well. And in, you know, The Rise of Skywalker, it's just sort of taken as he's still alive.
Yeah.
You know, if he's a clone, that's one thing. But if he's still alive, that's again, a little, makes that a little less satisfying. Yeah. But, yeah, I will just say, if you haven't read this, sorry we just spoiled it for you, but you should have known better. But if you haven't read it and you've been sort of waiting, definitely give this one a read. Think hard before you go into Dark Empire 2. I don't know if we're going to get around to that before the new comics start back up. But, man, I just really, really enjoyed this a lot more than I did the first time I read it. And I don't know if it's because of the time that's passed or what's come since. But everything about this just worked for me, other than that the ending and the fact that the cliffhangers at the end of each issue are a little abrupt. But the art on this thing is what I found the most intriguing, because it's not photorealistic. It's very not abstract. That's not the word I'm looking for. But it's more evocative than it is representative.
That's a very good way of putting it. Yeah.
And I really, really think it works. Works for the story that they're telling and the vibe that they've created. And I just think, yeah, it's really good. And I can see why this launched, you know, 1,000 comics that came after it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
How often do you go back and read this, Matt? Just probably not very, I would imagine, because there's many other books out there to read.
Not very. You know, I haven't gone back to this one in probably 20, 25 years.
Since it came out, yeah.
I mean, you know, I recall pulling it out of my short box in the late 90s and giving it another read, you know, because I was just, you know, that was, you know, the build up to the Phantom Menace. And
right.
So, you know, let's check this out. You know, it's like, you know, I watched, you know, I pulled out my laser discs of the original trilogy and was watching them nonstop, you know, in advance, you know, in preparation for the new movie. But, you know, when Marvel got the license back and, you know, to start publishing the Star Wars comics, I just kind of, you know, pitched forward and didn't really look back. I mean, you know, the one Dark Horse title that I go back to often is Star Wars Tales.
Yeah, because those are just so much fun.
Although I must admit, I have been rereading Star Wars Legacy a lot lately, and you know that might be something we need to dive into, you know, down the road on another one of these episodes, because
I've never read any of Star Wars Legacy. It took place so far in the future. It just didn't interest me at the time. So that's something I'll have to dive into.
That was the same. That was sort of my inkling as well. But then, you know, because, you know, I play a lot of Star Wars role-playing games, and I had been going through the Star Wars Saga role-playing game, and they actually published an entire book, you know, sort of a supplement, rule supplement, and it's focused on Star Wars Legacy. And so that got me intrigued. You know, I still have some hits and misses with the whole concept of that series. Just, you know, because, you know, I will be very upfront about this. You know, I have never liked the notion of the Yuuzhan Vong storylines, you know, where you had these.
And you see, know, I love the Invasion is the only one I've read about the Yuuzhan Vong, but I really enjoyed that.
I
get why people don't like it.
There's just something about the concept that I'm just like, you know, no.
It seems very Star Trek.
It does. But then again, we're also starting to see elements of that now in the new canon, you know, especially, you know, with the Thrawn novels, with what's out there in the unknown regions and what's to come, you know, like, you know, if something's got the Chiss ascendancy so spooked, you know, they would send somebody to serve with the Empire, you know, to foment ties as well as, you know, cover their own asses from both sides. You know, I can see why it's an intriguing plot point, but, you know, and that may change. I may have to go back and reread that again, and I may find myself with a different viewpoint. because, you know, because that's what happens. That's the beauty about reading these older stories is you have these notions that were developed when you initially read them, and then you go back and read them again through a different lens. And like, oh, that makes sense. Or, oh, okay, no, I didn't see it like that. Or, nope, still doesn't work.
And you find new things in them every time, too.
Exactly, exactly. So I thought overall, you know, having gone through it thoroughly, and I read this collection 6 times in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, I really wanted to be well-versed in it. And I just, you know, here's the thing. Each reading, I discovered a new little nugget, and I enjoyed the story more and more, primarily because of how personal the story was. You know, it was all about family. So, and Mahalo means nobody's left behind. Except for Palpatine.
Except for Palpatine, because he deserves it. He had it coming.
Totally. Oh, my gosh. Whew. Yes, he did.
Yeah, well, so that's going to do it for this edition of Star Wars Splash Page After Dark.
It was so much fun.
But we are going to have a special episode later on this week, so be on the lookout for that. Matt did an interview. Tell us a little bit about that, Matt, before just to give them a taste of what's to come.
Well, there's a great documentary that's available where you can buy it or rent it, I believe on iTunes and Amazon and perhaps others as well. And it's given the state of comics right now. It's timely, and it's called My Comic Shop Country, and it's a film by Anthony Desiato, Anthony Desiato, and he essentially, you know, he had a podcast for a while, you know, where he initially talked about the comic book shop that he worked at and for him was part of his community for so many years, and then it closed, so he started talking about other comic stores around the country and the sense of community that they create. And he ran a Kickstarter he raised money to make a documentary. And it's a very informative and entertaining look at comic shops, you know, from the old school, clubby style shops to the modern ones. We have one here in Philly called Amalgam, which is, it's a comic shop coffee house, but it's a community space. And he looks at how these comic shops are not only adapting and surviving, but in some cases thriving, you know, using comics as the foundation point.
Kind of a jumping off point.
Yeah. And I watched it one night after everybody here in the house had gone to sleep and was so enthused by it. And I had listened to Anthony's podcast for a while. And so I messaged him. I said, look, it's not about Star Wars comics, which is our reason for existence. But I think, you know, given that so many Star Wars comics readers also read other comics and enjoy comic shops, that it's probably worth talking to you about. And he was very gracious and agreed to come on, and we had a fairly nice chat about it. And I think that you all out there in Star Wars Splash Page listening land will probably enjoy it as well.
All right, so be on the lookout for that later on in the week in your podcast feed or your podcatcher of choice. So we'll be back to next week to discuss. What are we discussing next week?
I thought next we would launch Star Wars Splash Page Classics by taking a look at the Star Wars Legends Forever Crimson trade that came out earlier this year, January to be exact. And it collects Star Wars Volume 1 issues 16, 27, 29, 50, and of course, Star Wars number 108, which, as if you will recall, was the essentially, the new final issue of Volume 1.
Volume 1, right, which featured our buddy.
Written by Matt Rosenberg. And, of course, it features Valance the Hunter, you know, who, of course, is now making a name for himself in the new canon, in the currently ongoing Well, ongoing, but on pause.
Hiatus, yeah. Ongoing on hiatus.
You know, Bounty Hunters, that Ethan Sachs is writing and Paolo Villanelli is illustrating. And, you know, this, you know, it was, when this issue came out, I don't think we reviewed it because, you know, it was not new canon.
Marvel, we talked about 108. We talked about it, but I don't think we actually did a full on deep dive on it.
Yeah. No, we didn't. And of course, you know, this Star Wars 108, you know, it caps the Crimson Forever storyline. And it brought us, you know, not just Han and Luke and Princess Leia and Chewie and 3PO and R2-D2, but it also brought back Jackson, Amaze Foxtrain, Domina Taga, and of course, Valance the Hunter. And it's interesting because Domina Taga, you know, that's a familiar name because the antagonist in the new Dr. Aphra series is a Taga. So, again, there's truth in legends. So,
there is. So yeah. We'll be back next week to discuss that. That'll be a fun discussion.
Mm-hmm. And so, then we've got a couple of interviews that are shaping up. We're not going to say who they are just in case they fall through. But, you know, one of them you will probably know just, you know, by dint of their I don't want to say fan-made, but, you know, fan-made comics. But, you know, this creator has also got some great published work. It has done, I believe, a couple of actual Star Wars comics covers, but that's all we'll say. So, and then another one is we hope to nail down this week is a colorist who is going to explain to us how the art of coloring comics has changed from, you know, essentially the Bronze Age to the contemporary age, which we find ourselves in.
Looking forward to that. And Matt, as always, thank you for setting those up for us. That's
no problem.
You do the lion's share of the work, or all of the work actually on those. So we appreciate it.
I enjoy doing it. Now, of course, had this been a normal episode, we would have brought you reviews of Darth Vader number 3, Star Wars Adventures, The Clone Wars, Battle Tales number 3. And then, of course, again, if we were in normal times, the new comics due out April 22nd. Are Battle Tales number 4 and Star Wars number 5.
In an alternate timeline where things went differently.
Exactly.
But in this timeline, I'll just say thank you, Matt, for joining me again this evening.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you guys for listening. So for Star Wars Splash Page, I'm Jeff.
I'm Matt.
And may the Force be with you.
Always after dark.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of 3 and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.